ജയം വിശ്വപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അശ്രോത്രശില ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിതിലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിശ്വപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപ ഗോവിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗാമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസീദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദേ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ് നമോമ ശ്രീപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫല സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശാ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമന തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യദോന്വയാദിതരശ്ചാർത്ഥേഷു വിജ്ഞസ്വരാട് തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തഗുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണം സദാ വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യേത്ര കൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീതൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിപത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മൂരഹോരസിയാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താവത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തമനുപേതമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമജുഹാവാം പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനദോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതീർഷദം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനും ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ അമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കൊണിതാദൃദാനനിന്ദോഃ മമ ഉവാചി വിജൃംഭതാം മുരാരേ മഹുരിം കണികാവി കാവികാവി നമ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീ ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷാ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യാദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം വ്യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദീഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീ ചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയന് വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസതാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി അമ്പത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസ വിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകവാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവയീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രതജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപ്പല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുതീർണഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാഭോധിതം ലോകൈസജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്യവീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരതപങ്കജക്കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുതസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാ സുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ യോന്ത പ്രവിശ്യ മമ വാചമിമാം പ്രസുപ്തം സഞ്ജീവയത്തകില ശക്തിധരസ്വതാംനാം അന്യാംശ ഹസ്തചരണശ്രവണാം ത്വകാദീൻ പ്രാണാൻ നമോ ഭഗവതേ പുരുഷായ തുഭ്യം ഭൂതേർഭൂതപൂരുഷ നിർമാശേദേദമൂഷു പൂരുഷ മുക്തേ ഗുണാൻ ഷോഡശ ഷോഡശാൽപകം സോലം കൃഷിഷ്ഠ ഭഗവാൻ വജാംസി മേ. Last Sunday, we were talking about this one important thing. What was that? The position of a jnani in relationship with bhakti. Isn't it? It's a very difficult question because over years, things have changed so much and different theories have come about bhakti. As we talked about this, Brihadaranya Upanishad says this. What was that? Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. This is Upanishad mantram, it is. Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. That's all what the Upanishad is saying. While applying Upanishad mantram in the Puranam at different places, you have to look into the whole background, why, how that Upanishad mantram applies to that particular situation. Now, Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati, we have spoken before also in several other instances. For example, when at the end of Brahmastuti, at the end of Brahmastuti, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi asked him that, you remember when Krishna expanded into different forms, calves and cowherd boys and everything. And at that time, the gopis and the mothers of the calves, they felt an unusual love for the boys, isn't it? Unusual feeling for the calves and unusual feeling for the cowherd boys. At that time, Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, that normally all mothers will love their own children more than anybody else. But what was the reason that gopis felt more love for these cowherd boys who were expansions of Krishna? That was the question. You remember that? That's well known, isn't it? That Krishna brought back all the calves and sent them to Goshala. And Krishna expanded. Krishna, in the form of cowherd boys, went to their mothers. So when they did that, from the day it started was the day Brahma took them away. Brahma hid everybody. Brahma took all the cowherd boys and the calves and stole them and kept away separately. And that day Krishna expanded, and evening Krishna expanded forms all together went home. And those cowherd boys in whose Krishna expanded in the form of all the different cowherd boys which Brahma was hiding them, and also the calves, and they all looked very much identical to the children of the gopis' children. So when they went home, the mothers that day felt more love for their sons, cowherd boys, than usually they would have felt for their own sons, the original ones. But the original is away now. The duplicate has come. Krishna's forms have come. Parikshit is asking, normally you would have felt more happy, the mothers will feel more happy to their own children rather than somebody else. How come in this case they felt much more happiness to embrace these newly born cowherd boys? Why did that happen? This was Parikshit's question. So if you remember the answer to that, from Shukha Brahmarshi, which runs into about 10-12 verses. That's how he answered that question. But 10 or 12 verses. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, the answer begins there. Shri Shukha Vaja. Sarvesham abhi bhudanam nirva swalpmaiva vallabha idare bhatya vittadhyas tadva lebhada yeivahi. He says, Krishna is actually the soul of everybody. But if you say like that to someone, they won't understand it. Most of the people don't believe in a soul itself. So when you tell them Krishna is the soul, it becomes a little bit more difficult than to understand, right? So first thing what Shukha Brahmarshi did was, he tried to talk to them about the soul's nature of the soul, he says. Atma is always blissful, full of bliss it is. Satya, Chitta, Anandam, isn't it? Anandam is bliss. Therefore, because the nature, this thing called bliss, is always coming from the soul. It's always coming from the soul. That is why all of us, actually, we like ourselves more than anything else. Because if we are feeling some happiness in life, it's coming from there. That's the reason. Sometimes we get some happiness in life. And if ever any happiness you are getting it, it is actually not coming from outside. It's coming from inside. But most of the people don't know it. That's the problem. None of people understand that, right? And because we want that to come from the soul, we don't know that, but we want that happiness. Therefore, what we do is we go out and look, thinking that it is outside somewhere. And that is why we get attached to children, wealth, home, different things in this world, thinking that I will get happiness from that. But actual happiness is coming from the soul, right? And because thinking that I will get some happiness, in illusion, I'm thinking I'll go out and search for it, to find in different objects, right? So, but, because the truth is different, he is saying here that with this desire we are going and making, develop love towards other objects and other people also, thinking that they will give me happiness or some objects will give me happiness, instead of realizing that this happiness is coming from the soul. Tad Rajendriam Sneham Susogalpani Dehinam Na Tatha Mamada Alambi Putra Vitta Grihadishu. He said that this issue that happiness is coming from the soul, he said, if you observe, Shukha Brahmarshi is saying to Parikshit, if you observe the world, you will know it, he said. You will know it. Ignorant people, which most of us are, almost all the people in this world, he's saying, they are thinking they are the body. Isn't it? All of us think that we are this body. And this body is ahangaram, ego. Is identification with the body is ahangaram. So, for all the people who have a gross body, how they are attached to their own body, we all are attached to our own body. And you don't see to that extent attachment to the other bodies. First priority will be my own body, and then comes all the other bodies. Isn't it? And that if you observe this world, Shukha Brahmarshi is saying, you can find out. There's so many stories about that. Ganga River was flooding, right? Ganga River was flooding, and a monkey, mother and a baby, mother monkey was protecting the baby and sitting on a branch of a tree. But the water level kept rising. So monkey was becoming more and more protective of the baby. But then water level further risen, mother thought that it won't be possible for me to protect this baby anymore. So she left the baby first. Why? She wants to protect herself first. See how things change? At one point, it was thinking it wants to protect the baby. But as soon as the danger increased, it changed its mind. It left the baby because she couldn't do anything about it. Water level was further rising. And she couldn't further take the baby and run away anywhere. She was still trying to jump outside and get out from there somehow. But she couldn't do it. So in that process, the baby left. She thought, let the baby go. Let me protect myself first. So this is how the world is. If you observe this, you can see clearly. Everybody will first protect themselves, our own body. And then other other things like wife or children or family members or even the animals at home, cows or whatever, dogs or whatever you are maintaining. And similarly, your home. Home may be the last one, priority. First you will try to protect yourself, and then you will try to protect others who are connected with this body. And then you will protect the rest of the other things in a critical situation, isn't it? From this, what do we understand? That everybody has first protection. Number one priority is their own body. First protection, right? So, and similarly, for the benefit of for the benefit of your own happiness, that means first identification is with the body. Similarly, the happiness also, the priority is in the body first. And for that purpose, you are developing relationship with other people in this world. These are truth rishis have found out, and nobody can question all these things. We may or may not agree, that's another thing. So that's what they are saying. So, and they give the example that you have acquired a lot of wealth, and then you became sick, for example. You'll be willing to spend all the money just to save the body at any cost, is it not? You won't care about it. If it can be cured, some serious illness, you got it. So to protect the body, you are willing to go to any extent. At that time, you don't think about the cost. You think about your body first, and you will be concerned about that, right? So, similarly, when your son doesn't listen, or he is not willing to go along with you, at a particular moment, you decide, get rid of him. Don't bother about it anymore. You're not bothered about it anymore, right? In the same way, if the wife becomes a burden, or she is giving you too much of a heartache, a point comes when you decide to break up, leave her also. So therefore, ahangaspadam is this body, mamadaspadam is the other one. That means, ahangaram is attached to the body, mamada is attached to all the other things. Mamada means attachment, is towards other objects. Attachment to the body is higher than attachment to other things in this world. So when you have to give up things, the first thing you will give up is those things which you are attached to, not the one you are identifying with. This is the first thing to learn. That's what that's saying. Tad rajendra yadha sneham so soga almani dehinam na tatha mamadam alam mamada alambi putra vitta grahadishu putram vittam graham. Children, wife, home, family, all these things, they are secondary things. For anybody in crisis, when you are in a crisis, that's when everything comes out, the truth comes out at that time. Otherwise you will say that you are my, you know, apple of the eye and all that kind of things. To say, that's all poetic language. But when you are in trouble in this world, the priority is like this. This is the way it is set it up. The natural reaction from us will be in this way. You see, that's the way it is. So that's what he's saying. Dehalpa vadinam pumsam api rajanya satamam yada deham prayadamam tada nahyanivyachatam. So those who are identifying with the body, adhyasam, atma adhyasam, in there, those who have got that, you have to remember this, that aham and mama, me and mine, isn't it? Out of that, me is stronger than mine. Me is stronger than mine. Mine, I can still get rid of it. It won't bother me. But me is closer to me. I will protect me more than mine. That's the only thing it is. So, those who believe that the body is their identity, for them, as much they are attached to their own body, right? You don't see the same attachment to those things which are connected with the body, like the wife, like the children, like home, and all these things. Because they are identifying with the body so strongly, they think they love their body so much. They love their body so much. So, wherever we identify, that is where our attachment will be. Our attachment will be. And this logic applies to everybody. Whether he is a realized soul, in the sense that Yanis also, as well as ignorant people, both of them, it is the same thing. It doesn't change, this rule. It doesn't change, right? Dehobi. Mamadha bhakche tarkhiso atmavat priya. Ye jiryatyabhi dehesmin jividasha beliyasi. He's saying that intelligent people, very intelligent people, or who have got discrimination in them, they don't consider the body as the soul. They never, right? Then they know that body is not the self, right? Therefore, he's saying here, those who believe that they are the body, for them, all the things attached to the body, more important than that, is the gross body itself, which is based on the ahangara. Identification with the body means ahangara. So that is the strongest, that's where the strongest attachment will be, to the body, rather than the attachments to the body, other things which are attached to the body, right? So they will say that if the body can survive, let it survive. And the other things, if I cannot do anything about it, if it stays, it stays. But he will try to protect them, but it may or may not, right? But those who are aware of this, that attachment to the body is stronger than the attachment to the other objects or other people, right? Those who know about it, they won't think attachment body is important than attachment to other things. They will not think like that. They will, people who have got intelligence or people who have got proper understanding, they will say that both of them are same to me, whether this body or the other things whom I am loving, attached to, they are equal to me in that way. So Vivegi means one who has got power of discrimination, they won't consider body is anyway more important than the rest of the things, because they treat body equally with the other things, right? But people who don't have discrimination, they think that that they are identifying with the body, therefore they have this attitude that I should save the body at the cost of all the other things. These are all things to be thought through, otherwise it won't you won't understand what Shukha Brahmarshi is saying here. Upanishad Mandram, when you apply to Puranam, you have to know what you are talking about. Otherwise you will be just confused about everything. And this is happening mostly because people are used to this thinking that, oh, this is what it is said, and that's it. That's not how it is. This is the first thing I'm repeating this. Several things in Upanishads, it's a mantram it is in the Upanishads, right? That mantram, you are bringing it and applying to Puranam. Puranam is a story like katha, like thing going. So many incidents are happening. In different situations, same Upanishad mantram will apply in different places, right? So when you apply Upanishad mantram, the circumstances may be different when you are applying the Upanishad mantram. And how the Upanishad mantram is actually experienced in that particular situation, that you have to analyze it in your own mind and able to understand it. If you keep thinking about it, you will get the answer at the end. It's just the way it is. That's the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. This is our own handicap it is. That we are thinking that everything will be straightforward. Nothing is straightforward in the Shastra. Why does Krishna say Parokshavadam? Everything is spoken Paroksham. Upanishad mantram is there. One Upanishad mantram, you are applying at different situations in the Puranam. When you are applying that in the Puranam at different circumstances, how that fits in with that particular situation, that you have to find that. How it is. That means you have to understand the Upanishad mantram very well first. Upanishad mantram very well first. Now, Atmanastu Kamayam Sarvam Priyam Bhavadi. That's all Upanishad says. Upanishad mantram finishes there. It's in the Brihadaranya Upanishad this is. Atmanastu Kamayam Sarvam Priyam Bhavadi. Upanishad mantram is over that. And it is in that connection we spoke about this before. Brahmastuti, at the end of Brahma, when Parikshit asked this question to Shukha Brahmarshi, that how come this has happened, and Shukha Brahmarshi took about 15 verses to reply that, to fit that Upanishad mantram into it. So every time, whenever we have a situation like this, you just have to go back and look at Bhagavatam, where it was spoken and in what circumstances it was spoken, and then try to understand from that how that Upanishad mantram is fitting in there with that. So let's go through it. We'll understand it later. So Shukha Brahmarshi says here, when we have no discrimination power, avivegam, right? You are finding that body is more important than the other things to which you are attached to, right? You are attached to so many things. when you are no discrimination, you are thinking that body is more important, other things are not important. You are willing to sacrifice other things for the sake of the body. Then Shukla Brahma Rishi is saying that when people who have got discriminatory power, they know that the body is also as temporary as other things are, and therefore they won't give any more importance to this body than the other things. They are able to see that clearly in there. This is the first realization from that, right? Tasmat priyadama swalma sarvesham abidehinam tadartham eva sakalam jagadeda characharam. He says, because of this, all those who have a gross body, actually their identification with the self, that's where all their love is. First look after your own body, because majority of the people are in this world identifying with the body, isn't it? And other things in this world, like wife, children, home, and all these things, is only for keeping this body happy. Because I want to be happy, I'm going out and doing so many things. You have to have a wife, you have to have children, you have to have a home, and all these things. Ultimate goal of all these things is to make me happy, not make them happy. That's a misunderstanding. That is not the truth. That's what he's saying. That tadartham eva sagalam jagadida characharam. Then he said, Krishna menam avehitvam almanam akhilalpanam jagadidaya sopyatra dehiva bhadi mayaya. So then he said that Alma is dear to everybody, the self, right? Is dear to everyone. So therefore, this question, what Parikshit asked, what was the question? Question was this: why the gopis are showing so much affection for these expansions of Krishna rather than their own children? This was where it started, isn't it? You remember? That's where it started. Why the gopis are showing more affection to Krishna's expansions than to their own children? This is what I could not understand. Who said? Parikshit said that. So, and his question was, therefore, Brajavasis, the gopis, should have been showing more affection to their own children, isn't it? And Parikshit Shukla Brahma Rishi says, don't think about it, he said. Why? Because, realize this, he said, in all the living entities who is present inside, present as Jiva is nobody else than Krishna. This realization is the difficult one. We can only say this now on theory basis, isn't it? But till we realize this, but the result is already there. He's saying that in all living entities, in the form of Jiva who is present there, is Krishna. That's Krishna, right? That is the reason that gopis felt so much attraction to Krishna's expansions than her own children, right? And if you ask the question, how come Krishna has become like this, visible for the eyes, who is Paramatma, Andaryami, inside, everywhere? So the intention was, Krishna came here only for this reason only, to show to us that whatever pastimes I do, at the end of that, people should get attracted to me, means Paramatma, in that way. And in that way they develop bhakti towards me, and eventually happy. Such pastimes I should perform here. This was the purpose of the pastimes, and to bless this world. But while doing this, Maya is supporting Krishna. Krishna is performing all the pastimes with the help of Maya, and it gives an impression to people that he has also got a body like us. So actually that body what you are seeing is not the real one. That is with the help of Maya, for performing pastimes a form has been accepted in that way, right? So it is not, again Shukla Brahma Rishi is saying, Dehiva Bhadi Mayaya. That body is nothing but, it appears as though Paramatma has got a body, right? But actually, he is not like ordinary jivas. Due to karmam, that we had to accept the body. We have all accepted the body due to our karma, isn't it? Karma forces this body on us, right? But Krishna's case, it is different. It was not that body form what you are finding. Is Antaryami has accepted a form. Paramatma has accepted a form in conjunction with Maya in this world, so that that form is present inside us as jiva, inside us, to make us aware of that form in that way, to get that lesson to us. For that purpose, that form has been accepted. And then he said, Vastudo janadamatra krishnam swasnus charishnucha bhagavad rupam akhilam na anyal vastiha kinchana. He says, Krishna is not only in the moving objects, even in the non-moving objects, Krishna is present. Charam, acharam, like trees, plants, creepers and everything, he is present there. There also, as the soul present inside, is Krishna there. Right? So, once we realize Krishna properly, then moving, non-moving, everything is Krishna at the end. Right? So, in other words, Krishna is present in everything and everything is Krishna. Krishna is present in everything and everything is in Krishna. Right? So, and from that you have to connect that with the Bhagavad Gita words. Na sado vidyade bhavo. Na bhavo vidyade sadha. Ubhayorame drishtvandam sthaneyo sthatudarshivi. It is that verse expanded in this way. Now, I can only say this much. Now, if you keep thinking about it, read through the verses, think about it again and again and again, and then suddenly you will get the connection between the verse and what is spoken in the purport. That's how you understand many things. Initially, you won't get to know it, what is being spoken. As I said, Upanishads are all spoken in a very codified form. Very few words. Almanastu kamayam sarvamidam priyam bhavati. That's all it is said. Almanastu kamayam sarvamidam priyam bhavati. And that, to explain that in this situation, how Shuka Brahmarshi took 5, 8 to 10 verses to say this to Parikshit. Because Parikshit raised this question. And the answer is this. Krishna menam avehitam. Almanam akhila almanam. I don't know whether you have understood now what I have said till now. Because, you see, Krishna is the soul of everybody. And our happiness is coming from the soul. All the happiness what you are getting in this world is coming from the soul. Even that is not clicking for us. So what you do? We are still thinking it's coming from the body, coming from the different objects, things like that. Rishis are saying to us, no happiness is coming from outside. All the happiness what you are experiencing is coming from the soul. Till you come to reconcile with this theory, you won't understand what everything else what we have said. That happiness is coming from the soul, first thing. So in order that the happiness is coming from the soul, and that soul is Krishna. Krishna menam avehitvam. That is why that verse, 55th verse in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, is so important. As I mentioned before, Bhagavatam is like this. A story will be spoken. And in that chapter somewhere, Shuka Brahmarshi will find an opportunity to bring the Upanishad into it. And put the whole story centered around that principle of Upanishad. Upanishad principle. Upanishads and Bhagavatam is so closely connected. And this verse, Krishna menam avehitvam alpanam akhilalpanam jagadidaya swapyatra dehiva bhadi mayaya. This verse is so important because that is that verse where Shuka Brahmarshi clarified to Parikshit that it's not surprising at all. Why? Because ultimately he is your soul. That's what Shuka Brahmarshi had to say. Parikshit understood then. Parikshit was able to understand straight away. Parikshit's question was, why gopis were showing so much affection towards Krishna's expansions? Parikshit heard that it's all Krishna's expansions. Shukha Brahmarshi has said this to him before, hasn't he? He said that they are all Krishna's expansions, the cowherd boys, the calves, and everything. So when the cows went to Goshala, the mother cows were showing unusual attachment to their new calves. They didn't know. Mothers didn't know. Gopis didn't know, nor the cows knew, that they are all Krishna's expansions. Normal time in the evening, when they came home, calves went to the Goshala, and the cowherd boys went to home. Gopis embraced them, these Krishna's expansions, not knowing that they are Krishna's expansions. They thought it's their sons have come back. But they were, that particular time, they were feeling unusual attachment to the boys who had come back. And similarly, cows were feeling attachment to the calves in the same way. Why did this happen? That's the answer here. Krishna menam avehitam, alpanam akhilalpanam. Because normally the happiness comes from the soul. And who is that soul? It is Krishna. So when Krishna from inside has come out in the form of these cowherd boys and in the form of calves, is it any surprising that they felt more happiness that day? That's his question. Only Shukha Brahmarshi can tell us these things. This is too subtle for us to understand. Krishna menam avehitvam alpanam akhilalpanam. If you understand that verse very well, then you will understand this verse. Alpanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavati. This alpanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavati in Brihadaranyam, Shukha Brahmarshi spoke in Bhagavadam in this way. You see? So that's what I'm saying. Upanishad's mantram, when you bring into Bhagavadam, you have to look at the background where it was spoken and how that applies to that particular situation. So, this thing you have to sit and reflect on it, and then you will get it at the end. One day Krishna will make you feel, experience it inside, that this is how it is. And there is no other explanation you can. By explanation alone it won't happen. You may think, but it is not. That's not how it happens. So, Krishna menam avehitam alpanam akhilalpanam jagatidaya sopyatra dehiva bhadi mayaya. To say this, he spoke from verse 50 onwards. So, that is that situation where we discussed that statement in earlier. Now, here we were talking about it last Sunday, that why did I say that verse there? Why? Because this misunderstanding in us, that bhakti, about bhakti, right? Yajnavalkya Maharshi mentioned this. Yajnavalkya Maharshi talks about this in the Brihadaranyam, right? Think through it again. In the eyes of the Shastram, this is, right? This is important. In the eyes of the Shastram, you cannot love anything in this world unconditionally. If you are loving something, that means there is some conditions attached to it. Sopadhigam, nirubadhigam, they call it. Nirubadhigam means unconditional. Sopadhigam means conditional. Right? So, suppose I find something, I'll say I like this mobile phone, right? And if you ask me the question, why do you want it, right? I should have a reply for that, isn't it? If I want this mobile phone, and I take it, and you're asking, why do you want my phone? So I will have to have an answer for that, right? So, any object in this world, if you have an attraction, if you want it, you should have a reply for that, why you want it. I could say, oh, I like it, I love it. Because I feel, if I have that mobile phone, I will be happy. And where is that happiness will come from? From inside. Not from the phone. It will come from inside. It is my ignorance in me, avidya in me, making me think like this, that I will get happiness if I have that phone. So in this way, everything in this life, whether it is wife, children, or any other things, everything, whatever you think about, right? Because if I have that mobile phone, I will think that, oh, I maybe I can use it for these purposes. So many things in my mind, I will think in a particular way about that object, that how it will benefit me, right? So that is why when Brihadaranya Upanishad, Yajnavalkya Maharshi said this, he didn't just stop with that. Which one? Almanasukamaya sarvamivam priyam bhavati. He didn't stop with that. He said that pati priyo bhavati. Wife likes a husband because she is benefiting from that. And similarly, husband likes a wife because he is benefiting from that. So the general principle is this, that unless I have some benefit, I won't be going and loving anybody in this world or any object in this world, right? So if husband is favorable to the wife, it is not for husband's benefit, it is for the wife's benefit. Wife likes it like that, that he is favorable to me, right? Because she is getting some benefit from that, right? So pati or husband is a person outside her. So, suppose there is a love relationship. Why is a loving relationship? Because it's giving me happiness. That's what it is. All these relationships in this world are like that. It is giving me happiness. Therefore, I love him. Because it gives me happiness. Right? And the moment it is not giving me any happiness, then the love also goes with that. Right? So, this happiness what you are getting from different objects, because it is benefiting you in some form, therefore, you are able to continue with it. Because it's benefiting you in some form, right? So, why is he saying this? Why this point is very relevant here? Because the topic we are discussing is like that. We were discussing this. That bhakti, bhakti we say, isn't it? And everybody talks about prema bhakti. Pure bhakti they call it. Some people call it as pure bhakti. Some people call it as prema bhakti. And now the definition is of pure bhakti or prema bhakti is unconditional. Shastram is saying you cannot have pure bhakti unconditionally. This is the Shastram's opinion. If you don't bring Shastram into it, people will believe it. And everybody who is talking about pure bhakti and prema bhakti won't say this to anybody. Why they are not taking the Shastram statement seriously? Because then they can't propagate their prema bhakti. If I'm saying to somebody, oh, you have to love Krishna without any conditions. Totally. If I'm not getting any benefit from Krishna, why should I love him? This question is always there. Because Shastram is saying, you are loving somebody only with one motive because it's benefiting you. Now the moment you say, by loving Krishna I'm getting benefited, that means it's not unconditional anymore. Is it not? Does it make sense? That is why Upanishads should be brought into Bhagavatam. Otherwise, it will become very emotional thing. People will start saying so many things from the Bhagavatam based on emotions. Now, ordinary people, everybody is practicing, normal people who are talking about bhakti, sagama bhakti, people who have got desire with bhakti. We say that's a low class bhakti. And we say people who have no desires, that is nishkama bhakti, pure bhakti, or prema bhakti, whichever way we call it, isn't it? So that bhakti cannot exist. Because if you say that, I love Krishna without any motivations, then why are you loving him? If there is no motivation, there is some motivation inside. That you can't take it away from him. You can't develop bhakti that way. That's what he is saying here. That it's a very important thing to think about this, right? Even if it is God, and if you start seeing God outside as a person, separately from you, right? And if you want to develop love for him, then I need to get some benefit from that love. That's the argument. This is the reason why Krishna is saying, Jnani's bhakti is superior. You have to connect Yani's bhakti with this one. Only then you will understand why Krishna said like that, right? So, because as soon as you say, in Dvaitam, that is how it is. As soon as you say that you have unconditional bhakti inside, and if you are saying that you are loving a particular form outside, Krishna or any other form for that matter, outside, separately from you, and then you are seeing that form and you are making these statements, and no matter whatever you may say, at the end, your bhakti is not unconditional. It's not unalloyed, still, right? And that applies even to the gopis' bhakti. Prajagopis' bhakti also, right? Because that's the example given here, isn't it? Prajagopis' bhakti. So, look at Vrajagopi's situation, what it is, right? And Narada Bhakti Sutram talks about Vrajagopis as the example. Yatha Vrajagopi Ganam, it says. So, till now what we have spoken is that if I come to this situation that I don't exist anymore, right? And if I have to develop an attachment, bhakti towards an object outside me, right? In that case, I have to get some benefit from that relationship, right? If it is like that, let it matter what it is, even if it is liberation. Suppose Krishna comes and he says, I can give you liberation, then I will say yes. I will have all the bhakti for you. I will surrender to you. I'll take your shelter. I'll develop attachment. I'll do everything. Why? Because deep inside me, I feel Krishna will give me liberation at the end. So I'm willing to do all these things. So everything has some motive behind it at any cost, right? Or because it within me, I am very conscious that I need liberation after from this material life, right? Or freedom from all the distress, right? So, prayojanam, mandobi na pravartade, means that even very, very dull-headed people, they also work in this world only if there is some benefit from that. Less intelligent people, I'm saying. They will do something in this world. All types of people are working in this world, is it not? To get some benefit. Very intelligent people are working, very dull-headed people are also working. Only if there is some benefit, they will do the work. Otherwise, they won't be working, right? So, the moment you see Krishna is separate from the self, from your very self, if you see Krishna is separate from him, and then if you say that you have unconditional bhakti for him, it is not possible. The moment you realize Krishna as separately from you and he is outside as a person standing there, separate from you, and then you say that you have pure bhakti for him, unconditional bhakti for him, it's not possible. Why? Yajnavalkya Maharshi says this. Almanastu gamaya saromidam priyam bhavadi. That is the problem. So, therefore, this is where Jnani is different. Jnani doesn't think like that. Right? Jnani twalpaiva me matam, he says. Jnani knows he is inside me as Andaryami. I am that inside me. Right? So, what is the commentary on that? Prasiddham hi loke. Alma priyam bhavadi. Priyam hi bhavadi. Because there is only one reason. To me, the most attachment is me only. That is the reason for that. And Krishna is that me inside. And therefore, Jnani's bhakti is the right bhakti. I don't know whether you got it all this. You see, people, when we come to this world, completely identifying with the body, after several lifetimes you are identifying with the body, and this is whole the science of the soul. And that is why to what extent that spiritual culture is in us, to that extent you will understand about the soul. So therefore many times, people who are propagating bhakti, they won't talk about the soul very much. Have you noticed that? They will be mostly busy with what we call as kriya kalapa bhakti. Kriya kalapa means engaging people in lot of activities. Kriya and kalapam, and making a big revolution out of that. And keeping them busy like that. That's all you can do, because they are not able to understand this nature of the soul, how the soul is changing our thinking, and Antaryami is the self, outside is Krishna. All these are, they can't even visualize it or imagine that in their mind. So when people are in that stage in spiritual life, the best thing is to engage in Kriya Kalapa Bhakti. They like all this dancing, music, singing, and so many other rituals, and Radhayatras, and all sorts of things, they will get busy with that. Because this one thing is not developing inside properly. Whereas those who are attracted, those who are on a higher understanding of the soul, that the soul is present inside, soul is doing everything, they will not be attracted so much to the external side of it. They will be more attracted towards the internal thing. Because ultimately, you need internal realization. All that things what you have done in this world, that will all be gone one day. That's not going to be there. You are thinking, oh, I have done so many Rathayatras, so many Harinams, so many rounds I have chanted, all that is recorded somewhere, and based on that they are going to make a judgment about us. That's not how it works. That was all done, that is called Kriya Kalapa Bhakti. Kriya Kalapa Bhakti means that engaging the body as much as possible, so that you don't go and do some nonsense otherwise. At least to keep you out of it, for that purpose. But here, we are talking about, out of the four types of devotees, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, Jnani is dear to me. Why? That is the question. And the answer is what this is, we are talking about. Why Jnani is dear to Krishna, more than anybody else? Because this is, right? This is the only reason. Because for me, first thing, the most love for me is for me first, not for anybody else. I love myself more than anybody else, right? And that is because all my happiness is coming from me, from there, right? And what is the reason that I love myself so much? No answer to that. That's how it is. That's all, right? You can see this. Suppose I make some mistake. By doing something, I made some mistake, right? I will easily forgive myself. If somebody else does it, I won't. If I have done something wrong, I say that because I love myself, either I will say that, oh, forget it. I mean, it just happened like that, so what? Because I love myself. That's the reason for that. I may have done so many severe mistakes in my life, but I am willing to forgive myself, but I am not willing to forgive others. What? This is the reason for that. And if you ask, why is it like that? No answer. That's how it is. That's what Acharya Swamiji mentioned in the commentary. He said that, prasiddham hi loke, atma priyam hi bhavati. Atma is the most dear thing for everyone in this world. That's why sometimes we do so many nonsense in this world. But we next day walk outside as though we are gentlemen, after doing all the nonsense in this world. Why? I've forgiven myself, because that's okay with me. But if somebody else has done, I would have recorded it and kept it forever. Whole life I'll repeat it. Is it not? Why is that difference coming? It is because of this. Alma priyam bhavati. Self is more important than anything else. Because all my if I'm getting any happiness in life, it's coming from there. And that, you can't change it, because that's the way it is. It's created like that, right? So, Atma Swarupam is like that, and that is favorable for Vedantam. Therefore, Prasiddham hi loke, Atma Priyam Bhavadi, Tasmad, Jnani ne Atmatvad. Therefore, Jnani considers Atmatvad, Jnani Tvalpmeva me madam. So, Jnani means Ishvara or Krishna outside and Atma inside. Vedam na pashyati. He finds no difference between the person outside and Krishna inside. You have to study the jnani's discussion sometimes to get this understanding. How they see bhakti. Then you will understand it. Nowadays we are only blasting the jnanis, isn't it? That's what we are doing. And most of the people, I'm saying, they think, oh, bhakti is much higher, jnani, they don't understand, they are nothing. They do understand better. There is this famous story about Ramana Maharshi. We have read this many times, I've said this also, that a devotee asked him, he was a devotee, and he says to Ramana Maharshi, because Ramana Maharshi was a devotee of Lord Shiva, Arunachaleshwara, right? So he says to Ramana Maharshi, if Lord Shiva comes in front of you tomorrow and asks you what you want, you should see his reply. He spoke in Tamil, the reply was in Tamil. He said to him, don't play all this game with me, he says. I'll say to Lord Shiva. He says, don't play this game with me, coming outside and asking me what you want. You are inside me. Inside me. Give me that realization, he said. I won't ask you for anything. I don't want anything. What I want is that I want this realization inside, that it's you who is inside me. And you are sitting inside me and you are asking me what you want. So don't play this game, he said. And this is what I will say to Lord Shiva, he said to the devotee who asked this question. So you have to sometimes think how jnanis think about bhakti from their point of view, right? He will never say, Krishna is separate, I am separate. That separation doesn't exist in them, right? So, Atmatvad Vasudeva Priyo Bhavati. Because he is Atma inside, as your very soul, Vasudeva is dear to him, is present inside, Atma Eva. So, therefore, for Jnani, Vasudeva. Because he is present inside, as Jiva inside in the Chittam, Vasudeva is present. That's why the name Vasudeva has come. He is present inside as a self. And Atma Mama Priyaha. Mama Vasudeva Vyabhi Priyaha Atmatvad. This is all in the Bhashyam. So because there is no difference in the jnani's realization that God is somebody who is separate from him, separately existing, therefore his relationship with God is unconditional. Because he is not seeing him separate from him, right? So, but you should not think, oh, because he is thinking like that, it is against bhakti, right? Now, what is bhakti then? This question comes, isn't it? Bhakti means, Narada Maharshi is saying, you look into Narada Maharshi's statements, you can see there that bhakti only applies to jnani. Only jnani has bhakti. Nobody else has got bhakti. Everything else is based on some benefit you are making that relationship. Actual bhakti is only possible for the jnani. And that is the reason when Krishna said, what did he say? Brahma Bhuda Prasannatma Na Shochadi Na Kamkshadi Sama Sarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Lebhade Param. That bhakti is only possible when you have proper Aham Brahmasmi realization, that I am Brahma. Only in that state bhakti is, proper bhakti will come. Not in any other state. Therefore, premam bhakti is always inside the Atma, Atma Swarupam, right? And if you realize that, self-realization happens to a person. When self-realization happens to a person, what are you realizing actually? My Swarupam is Krishna. Krishna Swarupam is Atma Swarupam. And once that realization comes, then there is no question of further talking about another bhakti after that. Doesn't come after that. Because you have realized inside that your own Swarupam, Atma Swarupam, is Krishna Swarupam. Krishna is inside me as my very self. If I have realized that, then there is no separation anymore. That is over, right? So, and that is bhakti. And any other bhakti outside this is all conditional. Sopadhyam. It's all conditional. As I mentioned before, some people will say pure bhakti, and they will think that they are executing pure bhakti. Our question to them is that, then why are you executing bhakti? What for what? Are you getting any? You must be getting something out of it. Otherwise you won't be doing it. Isn't it? It is not possible, especially someone whom you have not even seen, Krishna. Based on the Shastram, if you say you have developed pure bhakti towards somebody, then it's very difficult to understand that, right? So, that is why, then now the question will come. We are analyzing, these are all different things to think through, right? Narada Maharshi, in Bhakti Sutram says, Yatha Vraja Gobiganam, he says, when he's talking about bhakti. Why did he quote gobis then? Why? If it is like this, that only Jnani is a proper, has got proper bhakti. Proper bhakti. How come Narada Maharshi quoted Yatha Vrajagobiganam, isn't it? In Bhagavatam there is Uddhava also, right? And why Shuka Brahmarshi didn't say about Uddhava as devotee, right? And many questions also asked, Uddhava has asked many questions also. And Uddhava was always a jnani. Always he remained as a jnani. And they could have shown him as an example, more than the gopis. Who? Narada Maharshi. But Narada Maharshi decided to use gopis as an example. You remember, in the Narada Bhakti Sutram, they are asking this question. Who has got bhakti? Who is examples? Then the answer was Yatha Vraja Gobiganam, like the gopis of Vrindavanam, he said. Right? So the reason is this. Why they used Gobiga rather than Uddhava? Uddhava is a jnana bhakta. That is why Krishna gave Ekadasha Skandam to him. So instead of using Uddhava, gopis were used as example, and the reason is this. Vrajagopis, gopis in Vrindavanam, they are not jnanis. They are not jnanis. Then how did they develop this love for Krishna? That question is there, isn't it? That question is there. So the answer for that is that something they have done in their previous lives, right? And from that realization, which was very strong in them, when they met Krishna, they got attracted to him. Due to their previous karma in previous life, they got attracted to him. When they got attracted to Krishna, they didn't know that Krishna is God. They didn't know that he is the Lord of the universe, or he is controlling this whole creation. All this was unknown to gopis. Gopis are ordinary people in this life, in this gopi's life. But due to some previous sukhritam they have done, which we know from Garga Bhagavatam and all that, whatever they have done, due to that attachment developed towards Krishna, that's all. And why it has happened, that they also don't know why it happened. Because in this life they don't know their previous lives. So in this life when they got attracted to Krishna, they didn't know why they got attracted to Krishna. They also don't know, but they got attracted due to the previous life, right? And in the Shastram they use the word mugdham. Mugdham means, right, you can't give an answer for that. A logical answer for that, right? There is no logical answer for that. Only thing you can say is, gopis got attracted to Krishna for some reason, which we don't know, right? We don't know that, they also don't know what it is. They got attracted, right? So, that is how they stayed with Krishna throughout. Due to their previous lives, something they have done, and naturally they got attracted to that form. So, in reality, you can say like this. Gopis, they didn't have what we call as anusandhanam. They don't have anusandhanam, right? Because who has anusandhanam? Yani sav anusandhanam. Anusandhanam means that able to direct your mind towards a particular goal continuously, unbrokenly, without break. Continuously able to pursue a thought towards some object which you love, a form or a person, whatever that is, right? But gopis were not like that. Anusandhanam was, they were not doing it like that. It was happening to them. Isn't it? They were not practicing bhakti like the way nowadays people practice. People nowadays are very organized in bhakti, isn't it? Modern world, everything is very organized. Even bhakti is organized now. People think like that. But the gopis didn't organize anything. They were not attending Mangalarti. They were not chanting 16 rounds. They were not getting initiated. And for the best examples for bhakti, spoken as gopis. Right? So, if you ask the question, then how come then they developed this attachment to Krishna like that? You can't give a specific reason for that. Specific reason for that. Because that is what called the mugdham. Mugdham means that their thoughts were like that, that they were just got attracted. And question, answer for that, why they got attracted? No answer for that. They just got attracted to Krishna like that. So, therefore, bhakti in them appears as though it's unconditional. Appears as though it is unconditional. Because, but they don't have anusandhanam, right? Therefore, without doing anusandhanam, you know this word anusandhanam means, isn't it? Anusandhanam means that your thoughts are flowing in one direction uninterruptedly and unbroken way to one goal at the end. That's anusandhanam. That anusandhanam was not happening to them, but for unconditional bhakti, because there was no anusandhanam, for unconditional bhakti, they were given an example. Pasvatvasmin parama prema rupam. Parama means nirubhadiyam, without any conditions. Because if you ask the question, for what purpose, there is no answer, right? Eventually, it ended up like that. If you ask them, why did you love Krishna? They don't say, they said, we don't know. We don't know why we loved him so much. And not because of they realized, like the jnanis realized it. Advaita jnanam. That was not the reason for that. Because gopis were not jnanis, right? And vastugadim param pariyalayojama. If you look at the vastastiti, you cannot say that. You can't say it is unconditional, but it looks like unconditional. Gopi's love for Krishna. Can't say it's unconditional, but it looks as though it is unconditional, right? Parama prema rupa. Parama means that unconditional. You ask this question to Uddhava. How come? For what purpose you have taken Krishna's shelter so much and got attached to Krishna like that? The answer will be, or Uddhava always believed this, that Krishna is the controller of everything in this creation. And it's only He who can give me freedom from this material existence or liberation, right? And He is my only shelter, right? And therefore, I'm taking a shelter. And as soon as you say that, then it is not unconditional. If you say it like that. Be careful while listening to all these things. You should think about it. Don't take it as a katha and leave it through this and that. It is all for thoughts to think about, right? So if you say that, I'm taking Krishna's shelter because He is the only one who can give me, liberation. And therefore I am taking His shelter. If you say like that, it is not unconditional then. Again it became conditional, isn't it? So, even if you say it's for liberation, then you can ask the question, oh, it's for liberation, you're taking a shelter, isn't it? So, That means you want to get out of this material existence, right? So, with any reason, if you have developed bhakti for Krishna, then it is not unconditional. It is conditional, right? We are not saying it's wrong. Eh? Don't get it wrong like that. Oh, all that bhakti is wrong, right? Pure bhakti or unconditional bhakti, only jnani has. Nobody else has got it, right? Any other bhakti, whatever you may say in this world, is not unconditional. Is not unconditional. This is the Vedantam saying. Vedantam says, only jnani's bhakti is bhakti, all other bhaktis are conditional. Some condition is there attached to it. Even somebody claims that I have pure bhakti. But there is one group of people who are saying they are practicing pure bhakti. All others are, and they are also saying that they are experiencing the highest rasa, madhuri bhakti and all that. They are saying like that. So, our argument towards them is that without any purpose, how come you are going on doing this whole life? You must be getting something from that. But they won't agree with that. They won't agree with that, right? So, so only thing is, any type of bhakti, right? Other bhakti is not unconditional. That's all we have to understand. Nothing more, right? Other bhakti, for example, Krishna mentions, say in the Bhagavad Gita also, isn't it? Artha, Arthati Jinyasu. There are three more types. Krishna says there, isn't it? What's their situation? Nothing wrong with them. They are also practicing bhakti. And you may ask the question, can I go and ask Krishna for little happiness in my life? Is it wrong in that? No, it's not wrong, but you are in that level. That's all it is, right? Whether it is small thing or it's a big thing, you can go to Krishna for that. There's nothing wrong. He can give it to you both. He can give you the smallest thing and the biggest thing. And whatever it may be, it is good to depend on Krishna. If He gives it to you, that means He will only give it to you provided it won't destroy you in other way, right? So, artharthi or artha or for my sense gratification, nothing wrong with all that. You can ask Krishna for all that. But if you are asking for that, only it should be in the proper way. Vihitam. Vihitam means it should be based on dharma. A dharmic way you should not ask Krishna. Because forbidden things you do in life, nishiddham, right? Adharmam. And then depending on that you want Krishna's support for that. That is wrong. But in a dharmic way, in karmam you are doing in life, you want some result from that to survive in this world or to fulfill some of your desires. It's not considered to be wrong. Only thing is, it won't elevate you spiritually. That's all it is. You will remain in that state for a long period of time. That's the problem. Asking, getting, and again asking, again getting. This will go on forever, right? So, that kind of bhakti won't help you for liberation. Freedom from the cycle of birth and death you won't get from that kind of bhakti, right? That's all it is. But you can't say it's wrong. It's not wrong. It's allowed. Shastram allows. That's why Krishna said that. Artho, Jijnyasu, Artharthi. All other three also Krishna says they are also bhakti. Only thing is those three won't allow you to come out of this birth and death business. Cycle of birth and death. You will continue to keep on coming back here again and again and again. Right? So, ideally, our goal should be to come out of this material cycle of birth and death, isn't it? Therefore, Artha, Artharthi, all these people, how do they see Krishna? They don't see Krishna with Tattva Jnanam, with knowledge. They don't see Him with knowledge. They are seeing Krishna because they have got attachment for sense gratification, desire for sense enjoyment, and anyone with sense enjoyment and sense gratification with those desires is approaching Krishna for anything, whatever it may be. What they are doing, asking there is, they want Krishna to show them some, to become favorable to them in their karma, isn't it? That's what basically you are saying. I'm doing this karma. I'm saying, you know, so many things in the Vedam is like that. Before we do, we want Krishna to be favorable to what we are going to do. Everything should come out favorably. And therefore you can see Bhumi Puja, Vastu Puja, and Griha Pravesha Puja, and so many puja. You buy a car puja also. All things, it has all come up like this. Car blessing, you remember? Famous car blessing. It's all come from this. That you want car should not get into any accident. And so there is a system for all these things. So all these things, similarly other things, when you get into a new house, you perform a puja there, you invite the priest. And why, even marriages also, like that, we want to make it as a Krishna's presence in the marriage. And we are saying to Krishna, marriage should work out, everything should come out nicely, so therefore puja for that. So like this, everything you look in our mundane life is on these principles, right? So then the question comes, this is all from the jnani's point of view, what jnani says about it. He's saying, you are thinking, Krishna is very partial, isn't it? That you are going and asking something and he should do it for you. That means, he should show, he should break the law and come to you in a favorable way, do something for you. And then you are glorifying him for that. For example, you will say to Krishna, I'm not asking a lot from you. I'm only asking a few things, little things, to make my life happy. Can you not do that for me? Some devotees pray like this. And they'll be showing hands like this in front of Krishna. And they're saying so many things from inside. You may not hear, but they are saying from inside. That in folded hands, and they'll do like this, and then say, something is bothering them in their life, right? So, what he's saying is that, basically you are saying, that show me some partiality. Show me some partiality, right? I'm not very capable, right? But don't take into that account, right? Give it to me still. Is it right to ask like this, right? Suppose I'm not very good in my karma. I'm not very good at doing things, right? You are asking him, I didn't do it very well, but I want the result. I didn't do the job well, but I still want the result, right? And you want him to listen to that, right? If I am not very expert in doing my work, right? I'm saying to Krishna, don't take that into account. Whether I have done well or not, don't take into account. But I want the result, right? This is what these people who are asking Krishna for different things is praying to him. That I have a lot of weaknesses in me, I'm not very good at many things, but I've done this karma and I want this result. This is what you're basically asking him, right? This is not tattvajnanam. You know that. It's not tattvajnanam, right? But that thought is important, and that is what is called mercy. You are asking Krishna to show mercy, isn't it? For example, a child, a boy has written an examination, right? And then he is going to the temple and he's saying to Krishna, give me at least a first class degree. That's all I'm looking for. And only once I'm asking this. For graduation, because he realizes that the first class degree matters a lot for him. And he's asking that. What does that mean? It means that if he has done his examination very well, then why does he require Krishna's mercy? He doesn't need it, isn't it? So, when you are asking for Krishna's mercy, what that means is, You have not done things properly. Therefore you want the mercy, right? So you are saying to Krishna, don't look at my karma, right? Without looking at my karma, how can I influence you? And you can do something for me. Don't look at my karma, what I have done, right? Basically you are telling him, influence. Use your influence and do help me in this situation, right? So it is that influence what you are asking Krishna to do is what you are calling Krishna's mercy. It is that influence, right? So otherwise that is why you are glorifying Krishna is so much karunyam, krupa and all that. We sing in the songs also. It's all about this, right? Through tattvam, tattvajnanam, if you look at it, there is no such thing as karunyam. Because Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, samoham sarvabhudeshu. Remember, in the 9th chapter, 29th verse, what does it say? Samoham sarvabhudeshu name deshesina priya ye bhajanti mam bhaktya maide deshujapyaham. There is a verse there. Krishna is saying here, that name desh karunyam, there is no such thing called karunyam, Krishna says. That's what that verse is saying. Samoham sarvabhudeshu, I am equal to all. I am not partial to anyone. Name dveshesthina priya. Nobody is close to me. Nobody. I am not hating anyone. I am equal to all. If it is like that, why do I have to go and ask Krishna to show some mercy to me? Krishna is saying, my situation is like this. Samoham sarvabhudeshu. Name dveshesthina priya. I have no dvesham or priyam to anyone. Right? So, if it is like that, then this bhakti, what we are talking about, artha, artharthi and all, has no meaning. It is just to explain to that verse is spoken there. You know, when we sagama bhakti, the problems are this, that you can ask anything to Krishna. There is nothing wrong with that, asking, right? Krishna may give it to you also. But that is, Krishna will look into your prarabdham and he will give it to you. That is why sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't get it. And you think, when you get it, you think, oh, look at this, Krishna is favorable to me. Krishna has solved my material problems. He got me a job, he got me a wife, he got me children. And so you're connecting all these things in your mind, all this you're building up. If you think all that and connect with this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, samoham sarvabhudeshu, it doesn't match, isn't it? It doesn't match because what Krishna is saying, I am equal to everybody. I don't have any preference to anyone. Everybody is equal to me. Because from Krishna's eyes, it is Krishna who is present in everybody as the very soul inside. What is happening to everyone, different experiences in life, is based on the karma what they have done in previous lives and this life. Karma is what is keeping us happiness or distress that's bringing in our mind. So nothing to do with Krishna. So he is saying here, you are asking him, be partial to me. Show me some preference compared to others. Give me this job, even though I have not done very well. At least give this job to me, right? And you say that I didn't do the job very well, therefore, but still I would like to get the job or something else in the same way, other things in life also. So therefore, still you are expecting something good to come out of that, right? So because of this lack of understanding of this verse, that is why many people, they do a lot of bad things in life. Many bad things in life, cheating, lying, everything, right? And then they think that if I go and deliver 50% to the temple, everything will be wiped out. Everything what I have done will be wiped out. They think like this. People conclude this, they are making their own shastram from that. They are not following Bhagavad Gita or anything. Bhagavad Gita is saying to us, samoham sarvabhudeshu. Yeah? Name dveshyastina priya. What's the next line? Very clear and very explicit way stated there. If you understand that verse, you can immediately understand that there is no point in going and asking Krishna. He will give it to me if I am entitled. If my karma is good, And I am entitled for that, he will give it. He is not going to stop it from giving it to you. By asking him to influence something and change it, your karma, he is not going to do it. That is why when you pray for something, and sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't get it. The reason is this, that your prarabdham is there, you are not meant to have it, you won't get it. You are meant to have it, it will come to you chasing you. Because you are meant to have it, it will come to you chasing you. So you don't have to ask Krishna for anything. That's what that verse is saying. Samoham sarvabhudeshu name dveshesti na priya. E bhajandidu mam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. That's what it is coming from, right? So some people are done a lot of bad things and they are thinking that if I give a large part of that chunk to Krishna, that is how they are thinking that everything will be wiped out. Even if I know I have done some things wrong in acquiring this wealth, but that will all be wiped out because I have given a lot of it to Krishna, isn't it? Shastram, if you look at the Shastram, let it be like that, because ultimately karma vasana is inside. That's not going to go away. And when the karma vasana is there, and similarly bhala vidrishti, that bhalam, karma bhalam also, desire is there, it's not gone away. So then, if a little bit of intelligence comes, vivegam comes, artha, artharthi, jitnyasu, whatever it may be, these are the other three. Jnani we have spoken before, what he is like. But artha, artharthi, jitnyasu, actually, there is no group like this. People think like that, isn't it? When you see Bhagavad Gita, when you read these verses, right, you start thinking, looking at others, is he an artharthi, or is he a jnani, or is he a jitnyasu? We put them into different boxes, right? What you have to realize is that one person can be a jitnyasu sometimes, and he can be artha also some other time. It's not in everybody is categorized into four groups or anything. These four groups is based on the understanding, Krishna is saying, that one person can be artharthi one time, when he wants money. He could be an artharthi, he could pray to Krishna like that. And the same person another time, when he doesn't need any money or anything else, he met somebody and he became jinyasu then. He becomes a jinyasu. So these three, artha, artharthi, jnani, so jinyasu, they can interchange all the time. You are not in one group all the time. You could be one day artha, another day jinyasu, another day artharthi. You could be any one of them, right? It will keep coming one after the other. When it is like that, it is better to ask Krishna for whatever you want, right? Because even though it is for sense gratification, what you are asking, it is better to ask Krishna. You may get it, you may not get it. And if you didn't get it, you don't get to get frightened about it, worried about it. Because, you know why they say like that, it's better to ask Krishna? The reason is this, that if you ask from somebody who are very bad people, but who are very wealthy and you want some favor from them, even if you get from them something, you have to be frightened. Whereas with Mahalvas, or from Krishna, if you pray for something and you get it, you don't have to be frightened. Bad people, if they give you something, then they will expect something from you in return. They won't give you unconditionally. They'll give you something, but then they will expect something in return you. In return they will expect. In Karmi's world, they'll say this openly. I've done you a favor, he owes me a favor, they say. They say like that, don't they? He owe me a favor. Where did this come from? Because he has done something for you, expecting something in return. So if you take help from bad people, anyway, monetarily or anything, always remember this, that they are expecting something in return at all times, right? It's only Krishna who won't ask anything in return. So that is the reason, if you want to ask somebody, ask a Krishna. For this reason only, right? So, That means people with Mahatmas also in the same way, who have got higher qualifications or great qualities, them you can ask for help, because they won't expect anything in return. And this is why Kalidas mentions this, that anything you want, there is no harm in asking Krishna, right? And this is how he talks about it, right? And we shouldn't think, oh, I am a materialist, I am not a devotee, and therefore I should not ask anything. Inferiority complex need not be there, he says. Main thing is that I should not engage in sinful activities. I should be hesitant to do sinful things. Sinful things not means these four regulative principles. All other things also, dharma basically, right? Say you are a materialist and you are remaining in this world as a materialist. There's nothing wrong in that, because as long as you are conscious that sinful activities I should avoid, if you are coming out of that. Because everybody, don't expect them to be spiritual in this world. Not many people will be interested in spiritual life, and not they will be attracted to spiritual life due to their prarabdham in life. Something is stopping them from getting attracted to spiritual path, right? So artha or artharthi, the other one, right? Both of them, in that situation, there is no tattva jnanam there. Knowledge is not there, isn't it? And if you look at that way, you are not realizing Krishna in its proper way. Swarupam. Swarupa jnanam is not there. Who is Krishna? So, in your relationship with Krishna, there is no Swarupa jnanam involved in that, right? Because if moment you realize, you remember what Swarupa jnanam is? Swarupa jnanam means that realizing Krishna is the Antaryami inside, directing my life, controlling my life every moment, this is Swarupa jnanam. Krishna Swarupam is that, is it not? Janma, Adya, Saitonu, that verse, if you have understood, that's all about Swarupa jnanam, isn't it? Swarupa lakshanam, tadastha lakshanam. Swarupa lakshanam is this. What is Krishna's Swarupam? Vedavyas is explaining there. So, that Swarupa jnanam of Swarupa lakshanam is not there in your relationship with Krishna then, when you are an artharthi or artha in that situation. And if you take that, then there won't be any prayers. Once Swarupa jnanam is inside, there won't be any prayers. Krishna is saying, Name Deshustina Priya. Nobody I hate, nobody I love. Nobody is dear to me, nobody I have any hate towards anyone. I am completely independent, and by your glorifications, I am not going to give you anything particularly special to you, right? If it is like that, what will artha do then? Artha, when you are suffering in life, when you are at artha stage, you know artha means, isn't it? Artha means always in a depressed state, affected very much by the sufferings of life, right? So, when you are in that state, these thoughts won't come to your mind. You will lose all your capacity to think properly, right? But when you are a jityasu, you can think. Do you know what I'm saying? That you see, nobody is artha or artharthi or jityasu. It can keep changing in your life depending on your material situation, physical conditions. All that things matters at that time. Accordingly, your thinking also will be like that, right? So, jityasu, when you are in a jityasu mood, if you are in a jityasu mood, you may have the Swarupa jnanam, you will think about it. But in the artha mode or artharthi mode, you won't have Swarupa jnanam. Swarupa jnanam, right? So, that is why in Tarka Shastram, Tarkam, you know, logic side of it, they say Ishvara or Krishna has got only three aspects. What are they? Knowledge, action, and jnanam, icha, kriya, desire. Knowledge, action, and desire. Icha shakti, jnana shakti, kriya shakti, swarupini. Says in the Lalita Sahasranam. There is nothing else spoken. Icha shakti, jnana shakti, kriya shakti, swarupini. Right? So, not anything else, satya sangalpam, or, if that is the case, in a jityasu, you know what jityasu means? Inquisitive, they say. And who is inquiring about that, right? He will, jityasu may do some shastram, study shastram, to some extent. He will vijaram, shastra vijaram, right? How will he pray to Krishna? And what will be his bhakti towards Krishna, right? And will jityasu has bhakti? We talked about jnani's bhakti. We talked about artha's bhakti. We talked about artharthi's bhakti. How will a jityasu will pray to Krishna, right? Basically, jityasu, who is a jityasu? Jityasu is that person who wants to know who he is. Isn't it? He's inquisitive to find out who he is, right? So, first thing we have to know is, devotee means, bhakta means, that he's always praying. He likes to pray, devotee, isn't it? And this praying business is not in the Vedam. It is come from the Semitic religions. This praying thing. It's not in the Vedam. It's on a very higher level Vedam knowledge is. Vedic knowledge thinks this praying has come. Why? Because suffering is there. And nothing wrong in that. Nothing wrong in that. But it won't help for self-realization. That's all. Therefore, right? So, this prayer, we say all the time. Pray, Prabhu, pray. Everybody pray, right? Prayer is bhakti, they think like that. But is it? Is it bhakti, praying, right? Is that right? No. Why? They say that always keep praying. Some people are always praying, isn't it? Give me this, give me that. Only then you can say that he is a devotee. That's not right. First thing we have to understand that if you are a jityasu or inquisitive person, how can you pray? Because if you don't have, you are not praying anything, then you are not a devotee, they say. You are not praying anything, then you are not a devotee, right? And their argument is that if you are a devotee, you should always be praying for something, right? So basically prayer means to make somebody favorable to you. That's what prayer means, isn't it? What you are saying is, to Krishna, you stay favorable to me. So, like a businessman does, you're making somebody favorable to you, make a decision favorable to me by saying like this, right? So, and because I'm praying to you, you should come favorable to me, or you may stay, will he stand against me? Krishna is saying, Name samoham sarvabhudeshu, name deshustina priya. Krishna's point is, I am always a witness to everything. You are doing karma, according to your prarabdham, you will get the result. I don't interfere in that. This is Krishna's position, right? So, more Krishna is a witness there. He's not a giving you results, but actually he's a witness. And jityasu will see Krishna in that way. I'm saying the differences between artha, arthati, jityasu and jnani. Jityasu sees Krishna. Krishna is a witness of everything for all the karma what I am doing and the results that's coming from that. He is only a witness to that. Nothing more to it than that, right? So if it is like that, what will jityasu ask Krishna? In the jityasu's eyes, how bhakti yogam will help him, right? And you have to give straight answers to all these questions. Bhakti yogam, how will it benefit a person for self-realization, right? And for that do you require prayers or not? And or is it all unnecessary, right? Main thing to realize that for self-realization, the main obstacle is that it's me and mine first. Adhyasam. Isn't it? Aham, mama. Aham, mama. Right? So, naisargikoyam logavyavaharaham bhavyasya bhavati, adhyasya bhavati. So, these two adhyasam, me and mine, that is the one which is the main obstacle in self-realization. Me and mine is the main obstacle. Therefore, this thinking that me, first thing. In Vedanta, we call it as aham, aham artham, right? Aham is the main problem and mama is the next problem, right? So this aham is, what is this aham? Aham means I am, existing, I am, this me, right? So anything that will help you to become free from this aham, I am, right? And whatever that can help you in doing that, that is favorable for self-realization. In any way, if you can come out of this aham, I am this, I am that, I am doing this, I am doing that. If you can come out of that, whatever technique you have in your spiritual path, that is all favorable, right? That means, by whatever means you can forget about your individuality, self-identity, right? Which is based on Shastram. To forget this, what we call this personality inside, right? If you are able to sit forgetting this personality, even for a short period of time, that is favorable for self-realization. Do you get the point? That this conscious of my existence, I am this body, and I am an individual jiva, or I am a person, that is that aham feeling inside, right? And from the Shastram point of view, this is how Shastram comes in. In everything, Shastram should be the basis. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense, right? So, in Shastram, they say in Sushupti stage, for example, right? I'm sleeping very well. At that time, I don't have the feeling of aham then. Personality is not there in the sleep, deep sleep state. There's no personality, right? So, you should not think, therefore, Sushupti is a good sadhana for self-realization. Some people will say like that, that in deep sleep state, I'm forgetting about myself, there's no personality. Therefore, deep sleep is a good sadhana then, for self-realization, right? And it's very helpful for self-realization. If you start preaching like that, because in the deep sleep, I don't know about myself, I'm forgetting about myself, right? And deep sleep you can get by various means. Drugs can help you to get into deep sleep. Alcohol can get you to deep sleep. So this is why some weird people are there like this, who uses all these things for self-realization. They have used that, right? And all that what happens is, they destroy their own mind and brain by doing that. So, sometimes when they are fully drunk, they are not conscious about themselves, isn't it? So while walking out from the pub, their clothes have all fallen off from the body. And you start thinking, oh, this man is not even on his bodily identity, he has lost. If you start thinking like that, you start thinking, oh, because of this helped him to come out of his bodily identity. And if you start using that as a sadhana for your spiritual life, where will it, what will happen? So you should also think, just like you can't use alcohol, drugs and all for self-realization, you can't use a sushupti also for self-realization. You can't do that, right? So, that is why Shastram is saying like this. If Shastram says like this, that only prescribed way,
through the prescribed process in the Shastram, you should realize the truth. For this reason only, right? All others are connected with sinful activities, right? So, and Sushupti is not a prescribed path, Sushupti, right? What is Sushupti? Sushupti is this, that a stage comes in our life, a time comes in our day, that we cannot control ourselves, right? Sometimes, for example, I want to sleep, I'm not getting sleep, right? But when I've done a lot of work in the vacant state, I'm exhausted, then a stage comes, I get sleep. Even if I don't want to sleep, it comes, right? That's all it is, the Sushupti. So Sushupti, you have to look at it that way. Sushupti is used as an example to tell us that when there is no personality, you are experiencing the bliss of the soul. That's all it is. You should not abuse Sushupti as a process of self-realization. When studying Shastram, you have to bear all these things in the mind. We use Sushupti a lot of times to tell what is self-realization means, isn't it? But it is spoken only to this level, Sushupti. That what you are experiencing in Sushupti is the nature of the soul, self-realized soul. But you cannot use Sushupti as a means for self-realization. So, there comes bhakti. Bhakti is the process actually spoken for this. Because if you get fixed up in Krishna's form, Krishna's holy name, Krishna's pastimes, anything that is related to Krishna that way, if your mind gets attracted to it and gets fixed up in this forever, at all that time what happens? This individual ego inside, aham, will not be there at that time. It will go leave you, because that is the beauty. When you are doing something for serving Krishna in some form, whatever it may be, chanting the holy name, hearing Krishna's pastimes, Srimad Bhagavatam, deity worship, or any other seva, whatever you are doing, it's all for Krishna, it's all for Krishna. With that awareness you are doing it. When you are doing that, what actually happens is, this personality inside doesn't get any support. It slowly disappears from inside. Disappears inside. Because these other things, all other karma what you do, all other karma what you do in this life is with a motive. Whereas if you are serving Krishna, you don't have a motive, because you know that it's not going for your benefit. It's done to please Krishna. So this is the reason that when you're doing something, this personality is very strong inside, when you're doing something for yourself, right? And that is what is called in the Bhagavatam as Hridaya Grandhi. Hridaya Grandhi means what? This one. That you're doing something and it is making you more fixed on your personality. That's called Hridaya Grandhi. I've done this, I got this result, I've done it. I owe this, I own this. He is mine, she is mine. They are my children. And this is my position in the society. Everything you can see is attached to you, the person. Instead, if everything is done for Krishna, you will never think like that. Krishna has allowed me to do this to please Him. He has given me an opportunity. I've done it. May Krishna be pleased with that. At that time, your personal ego is not getting any support. Personal ego is keeping quiet. It's not growing. In all other situations in life, personal ego is getting the boost. It's getting the boost. So, this is the way to gradually destroy that ego inside. Ego inside. So that is why this is a practice only. All karma is connected to Krishna for this reason, that the personality or the individual ego doesn't grow up inside. Right? So that is why in Ashtanga Yogam also, there is also Samadhi there, because you will see there Yoga Chittavritti Nirodha. Chittavritti Nirodham is Yogam, it says there. That Chittavritti Nirodham is beneficial at that time, because this thing that I am goes away at that time. The more you can keep me from the thoughts, Whatever technique will help that in Shastram, all of that is allowed for self-realization. Whatever process mentioned in the Shastram, there is a loads of other processes. This Dehara Vidya, Upagosala Vidya, Upanishads talks about various different methods by which how to take this ahangaram from inside and not allow the ahangaram to grow. Yeah. So any process spoken to keep this ahangaram free from inside, not allowing the ahangaram to grow, all that is beneficial for self-realization. Therefore, Jityasu, he also will have some desire inside. What is that? But he is not particular that he has to do something. Jityasu sees everything udasinam. That is the difference. Artha, Arthati, Jityasu, Jnani. Jnani is on a completely different level, which we have spoken before. Jnani's position. Jnani Tvatmaiva Me Matam. That is how he is seeing things, right? But Artharthi and Artha, we saw how it is. He has desires, he is suffering. He wants to ask somebody and he decides to go and ask Krishna, which is fine. And he will get it according to his prarabdham. If he is meant to get it, he will get it. If he is not meant to get it, he is not going to get it. So that is Artha, Artharthi. Now the only one which is this Jityasu, what is his relationship with Krishna? That's what we are talking about, right? So what is Jityasu's situation? Jityasu is seeing Krishna as a sakshi to everything and therefore he is udasinan. Udasina samam pashyan, says in the Bhagavad Gita. He is udasina state. He sees that if his life some happiness comes or distress comes, he is thinking that it is my karma phalam. He is thinking like that. And he also knows that my karma phalam, I have to suffer, whatever it is, good or bad. So Jityasu has gone a little higher than Artha and Artharthi, right? So, and the result of my actions comes to me at the appropriate time when it is ripe, when it's ripe. And Krishna is bringing and giving me the results at that time. And my karma phalam, karma what I have done, the results of that, another person cannot accept it. I have to accept it for what I have done, right? And I have to accept everything for the results of my own actions, good or bad. That's the way Jityasu knows all these things. I'm just saying, as I mentioned before, one person can be Artha sometime, some other time Artharthi, sometimes he can be a Jityasu. These three can change all the time in one person's life, right? So when he is in a Jityasu mode, he will think like this. When in the Artharthi mode, he won't be able to think like this. Or when he is Artha, he won't be able to think like this. We are thinking everything we can do, isn't it? No, from inside he is controlling it. Andaryami. He puts you into Artha mode because you are meant to suffer. So at that time he will give you some arti, some suffering. It will come to you by your prarabdham, it comes to you. And you will be in that mode, so you won't be able to pray anything else except in that artha mode. So he is saying, Jinyasa is saying, I have to accept the results of my own karma, whatever it may be, and let it come now. Why do I have to delay it? If it has to come, let it come. Because he is saying it is a purification anyway. It's a purification anyway. Therefore, I have got bad vasanas inside me. In order to take it away, he has given me these problems. And therefore, it's not of Krishna's fault. Jityasu can think all these things, right? And he will recognize it is his karma phalam. And still, he will be focused on self-realization. He will be focused on self-realization. So, therefore, you can't say that Jityasu is not a devotee. He is also a devotee, but in another way. So we must be very, very clear in our mind what Artha, Artharthi, Jityasu, Jnani means. It's easy to read that, and then most of the time what happens is we study that verse. And then we start looking at others, and then we put them in the box. Which one does he fall into? That's what most of the people do. And then we say, oh, I'm the one who is a jnani in this, because I'm not asking for money. I've given up everything in life. I'm wearing saffron now. So I'm not, naturally, I'm wearing saffron. I'm a sannyasi now. So therefore, I'm not artharthi. I'm not jijnyasu. I'm already a jnani. That's how you conclude yourself, and you start thinking everybody else in this world, putting them in their boxes. Artharthi, jnani, jijnyasu and all that. Right? But, so even though he's a jijnyasu, if you think that he has to pray for something, he can pray, but jijnyasu's prayers, how will that be? If he is in the self-realization mode, he is jijnyasu means that he understands things. Jijnyasu understands things. But sometimes he'll be in a mood for inquiring about self-realization. And that is why they say there, that is where that verse comes. So surubhanu anusandhanam bhaktiriti abhidhiyade, it says. Viveka Chudamani says like this, right? That when this jijnyasu, when he starts anusandhanam, that means he started the process of self-realization of knowledge. And that includes so surubha anusandhanam, that he started realizing that Krishna is inside me as my very self. And in that way, that bhakti is developing in him. He is thinking that God is there, Krishna is there, and he is a witness of everything in this world, and he is the controller of this whole creation, and he is the one who has created this whole thing, maintains it, and eventually everything is destroyed by him. And what is his identity, right? And in this way, even though he is seeing him, these are all tadastha lakshanam, you remember? Swarupa lakshanam, tadastha lakshanam. This srishti, sthiti, samharam, incarnations and all are all tadastha lakshanam, right? So even if you do all that and accept that, because he is a tattvajnani, he does not develop any emotional attachment to Krishna that way, right? Therefore, what you can understand that is, once you get tattvajnanam, tattvajnanam comes to a person. Tattvajnanam means knowledge of the self, as Krishna is the actual manifestation of Brahman. Brahman is Krishna himself, right? And Krishna is present inside me as the Antaryami. This is tattvajnanam. And if tattvajnanam, he has got it in that case, and then there won't be any emotions about it. There is no emotions, right? So he may be saying this, that I want that tattvajnanam inside me. And he could be praying for that as well, right? So at that moment, he has Veda Buddhi with Krishna, Veda Buddhi, right? With Veda Drishti, the difference between Antaryami and himself, right? But he understands that through the Shastram, through the Shastram. So then, what does he understand? He understands whom we call God, 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 Ishwara. His Swarupam is my Swarupam, also is the same Swarupam. It's not different from him. And what is the difference between me and God then, right? I don't know what that difference is. I don't know. But he knows. Krishna knows what's the difference between me and him. But I don't know. And that is what Krishna said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter. But we have understood in a different way. Why? Because we are thinking we are this body. Yeah, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, many lifetimes have passed, you didn't know. I knew. Natvai vaham nadu nasham. That verse, right? You see how subtle that verse is? Most of the people are reading that verse and thinking that, oh, Krishna knows everything. I don't know what happened to me. What Krishna is saying to us is that your identity, yeah, Swarupam is that what you didn't know. My Swarupam, I am always aware of what I am. Your Swarupam you never knew. So Krishna is not talking in terms of our death. That we are thinking that, oh, Krishna didn't know what I was in my previous life, in my life before that. And Krishna is saying, you didn't know that. What Krishna is saying, that you never knew who you were in any of those lives. That's what he is saying there in that verse. See how subtle that verse is. Natve vaham jadu nasham natum neme janadhipa. Yeah. And the same thing is the one that Jityasu knows this. That Ishwar, Krishna knows that. But because Krishna knows who he is, he has no fear any time. Where does fear come from? When you don't know who you are. That's where the fear is coming from. Isn't it? Where does this fear is coming to me all the time? You are feeling fearful, I am feeling fearful in life. Why? Because I don't know who I am. That is why the fear is coming. For in the Kavi Maharshi said this, isn't it? First verse itself. Udignagne asadalpa bhaval yatralpana vishwa nivartade bhi. He said. In one very short verse, he put the whole thing in there. So if you keep vijaram, thinking about that verse more and more, you will understand it. Where is the fear coming from, right? Krishna is not fearful about anything because Krishna knows who he is. And he is doing this creation, maintenance, dissolution, everything is happening. But nothing is bothering him. He is not fearful about anything. Why? Unlike when we do creation, when we maintain something, when we destroy something, we are fearful about everything. Krishna doesn't feel, even though this main, big, huge number of universes he is creating, maintaining it, dissolving it, he has no fear while doing it. Why? This reason. That's the reason for that. That is why you will see in that Upanishad verse, Anashtananyo Abhijaga Shiti Dvasuparna Saija Sakhayam Samana Vruksham Parishasya Jade Tayoranyam Pipala Swadvati Anashtananyo Abhijaga Shiti. He says, that is what that is saying there, right? So that bird which is sitting in the tree, in one branch at the top, without eating any of the fruits, and that pakshis, that bird's surubam is spoken in the Upanishad. Jushtam yadha pashyati vita shoka. He has not hungering, lamentation, nothing in him. So this other bird, which is another branch of the tree, eating the fruits, when that bird saw this bird on the top of the tree, when he saw the nature of that tree, this bird at the bottom got free from all distress just by seeing the other bird. Seeing how tranquil it is, the other bird, unaffected by anything what is happening. And he realizes this, right? Jushtam sevitam. What does this mean is that he realizes that even he, as soon as he recognizes that, and what it is saying is, you see, in the form of two birds it's spoken, right? For us, what is prominent is here, Jivatma and Paramatma, inside us. That's what we have to think about it. We are normally Jivatma. Paramatma is inside, right? So Paramatma's identity and Jivatma's identity is actually one. They're not different. It's one and the same thing. And from Shastram you can know this, but realization, it hasn't happened yet. You see that? Realization hasn't happened. But from Shastram we have understood that this so-called Jivatma is not different from the Paramatma. They are one and the same, right? So to get that realization, you can stay in the dual mode, Dvaitam. Dvaitam is acceptable. Dvaitam is not rejected any time. Dvaitam works at that time. At that time it is Dvaitam. And that is on this basis only, Anjaneya Swami says in the Ramayana. Remember? Deha buddhyastu dasoham. When I am thinking I am this body, I am your servant. Yeah? And jiva buddhyatu damshakam. If I am thinking I am a jiva, then I am your part and parcel. Atma buddhyastu tomevaham. That when I come to the platform of the soul, you and me are one. Idi me nishchidamadi. Anjaneya Swami says this in the Ramayana. He says this. So you can see, first line, Deha Buddhyastu Dasoham Dvaidam, Jiva Buddhyastu Damshagam Vishishta Dvaidam, and finally, Tamayavaham Alpa Vidya Advaidam. So in these three levels, all realizations are correct. In which level we are at, that's what matters. If I am in the Deha Buddhi, which we are all of us are in Dvaidam mode. So it's no point in saying that Advaidam is false. Advaidam is right in that level when you realize it. But when you are in the bodily level, Jiva level, we are according to that understanding, you are in that stage, right? So Tattva Sakshalkaram has not happened. So for that purpose, you have to do it with the Dvaita Buddhi. And so Swarupa Buddhi, Swarupam or Swarupam, right? That has to be, if that's not enough, it's purified, right? And it is not good enough. Ask the question, who am I, right? Sometimes we say like that, who am I? That question comes. To find out, who am I? I don't know who I am. Like Sanatana Goswami said to, what's his name, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that who am I? He asked this question. I don't know who I am, he said. So, that's not enough. Mahaprabhu said to him, you have to understand also who is, what is the truth. Also you have to know. And just because you have inquired who I am, alone is not sufficient to complete your inquiry, right? At the same time, you have to also realize who is Ishvara, who is me. Tal padartham, tum padartham, says Upanishads. And it is from that this Tattvamasi has come. This Mahavakyam, Tattvamasi has come. You have to give attention there. You have to give attention to whom you are, and you also have to give attention to who the truth is, what the truth is, right? So you have to give, not only inquire about who you are, you also have to inquire what the truth is, right? So, therefore, in Vedantam also, you have to give attention to the truth, not only to yourself, right? Therefore, in Advaitam, Advaitam is not against bhakti. Advaitam is not against bhakti. Advaitam is saying this. You are inquiring about yourself. You also have to inquire about the truth. Only then you will know the ultimate end realization is that you will realize that the Swarupam of the truth is your Swarupam as well. That is final realization, right? So, therefore, Advaitam is not against bhakti. And earlier we said in Advaitam tradition, Jagat, or this world, created world, is anirvachaniyam. Anirvachaniyam means impossible to define this world. Because why? It's all happening, this creation. We don't know why it was created in this way. Lot of living entities are coming here, stays for some time, and then they go. This is all life is, isn't it? If you look at this world, what is happening here? Loads of living entities come here in different forms. They come and they do different things and then they go from here. Nothing else happens here, is it? Isn't it? Often it is in the it's in the Panchamaskandam, in the fifth canto. There is this Ilavrata Varsham where Lord Shiva worshipping Sangharshanamurti there. There is a statement there that living entities don't realize one thing. Means all of us, right? What is happening here? They are thinking that they can enjoy here, they can do something here, they'll benefit from something. So many things they think about when they grow up here in this world, right? But what they're saying is, actually, if you look at your life in this world, when you leave this world, what do you take with you? What do you take it with you? Only karma vasana. I've come here, I've done a lot of karma, created a lot of vasana, and that is the only thing substance I'm carrying with me from here when I go. Nothing else, isn't it? All the other things you have acquired, you leave it here. Your body also you are leaving here. But karma vasana you carry with you. And that vasana, in course of time, give you fresh bodies. And depending on the amount of karmam you have done here, and the amount of attachment with which you have executed the karmam, to that extent, the vasana will be also strong inside. It won't leave you. It has actually doubled or trebled or multiplied many times from with the vasana with which you have come in. When you left, you have increased the vasana to a very high degree and left here. So basically, you have left this world with a lot of karma vasana with you. That's what it is. Nothing else you have earned from this world, says there. So, this situation, right, jagat is anirvajaniyam, and there is no particular order for anything, what is happening here, right? And order means, to our mind, it doesn't look any logic here, what's happening here. There are so many things we don't know, why one person is suffering, why one war is happening in one place, why one party is turning against another party. Mundane level you can find so many things. But totally unexpected things are always happening in this world, isn't it? So, what it shows is that there is no a set pattern in which it is working to our eyes. In our eyes. There's nothing is happening on a set level, set pattern, right? If you see it like that, and if you think that there is no any law which is controlling all these things, in that is the case, then why do you require that thing that somebody is controlling it then? It's all just happening. Why don't you take it like that? So, because Brahma means this illusion, right? And therefore, if it is all a Brahma, what is happening? Not making any sense to us, what's going on in this world. If it is like that, how can you say that there is an order for this, a control on this, right? Therefore, they say, it is difficult for us to accept that there is a controller for all these things. There's an argument like that. So, and this question will come in the Advaita Sampradaya. They will ask this question. It has to be answered. So, what they're saying is, whatever you're saying is true, that there is no proof for all that. Everything to tell you that there is a controller. And Jagat in Advaitam is, Jagat is mithya, isn't it? Jagat mithya, we accept that, but why saying that mithya, what it means is, it's not very organized mithya. You know what that means? That means that there is no order in anything, how things are happening, right? That is false, they're saying, that let it be a Brahman. Brahman, because you see, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, Jivo Brahmaiva Napara. These are the Upanishad words, statements, right? So, let it be Brahman, and the way you are seeing this world is also a Brahman. Brahman means a sort of illusion in your mind, right? But Advaitam is saying that there is a system here. There is a system here. Like all other philosophers say there is a system, Advaitam also is saying there. But if you go look into this system very deeply inside, you will find there will be little differences from the way others have understood the system and the way Advaitam is explaining that system, right? What Advaitam is saying, up to a certain extent, this creation has an order. A particular order, right? For example, karma is there, right? Results are there for the karma. Pious activities are there. Sinful activities are there. Similarly, because we are all coming into this world in different bodies and different situations, Advaitam is saying, that is enough to show, say, that you had a previous life. Because otherwise you can't justify it. Somebody is born rich, and somebody is born very poor. And this poor person has to work very hard to earn a little few bob, as they say. Isn't it? And the rich person, he has so much wealth, he doesn't have to do anything. Now you ask the question, why is this different for two people like this? The Advaitam is coming from this point of view, this is enough proof that you had a previous birth. Something you have done in the past, in this life you have to come like this. Something you have done good in the last past life, you got this rich birth. So rich and poor conditions is justified in Advaitam based on the previous life, karma. What we call it as karma, prarabdham or whatever way that is called, right? So they are saying that karma has its results. Pious activities will have pious results, sinful activities will have its sinful results, right? And there is a system for this. That's what Advaitam says, right? Not that there is no system. Advaitam doesn't exist. There is a system, he said. So therefore, because there is a system working there, there must be a controller behind it. Otherwise, a system cannot exist, right? And if there is a system, then it is not a Brahman, right? Vyavasthitam means what? Vyavasthitam means organized, right? Sarvajaninam. If everything is properly understood, why it is happening, then how can you call this as Brahman, right? Just like I am seeing you all in front of me, and I am seeing so many other things, you are also seeing them. You can't say everything is Brahman, because there is a system that, therefore, but that system you may not be able to completely know it, what that system is. Because there are a lot of things are subtle in that. Isn't it? Beyond, it is kept away from us. Maya has not allowed us to know that. Maya knows. That's why Maya engages in certain activities in such a way that I get through that results what I should experience, suffer here or enjoy here. And she will create the situations in such a way. She will create the thoughts in my mind in such a way. And may force me to do certain things in a particular way so that I get through that prarabdha. There is a system. Only thing is that system, knowledge of the system is not given to us. It's kept away from us. Right? So, therefore, even when you say this creation is a Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi, when you say this Brahman, Brahman is referring to that Brahmam Satyam Jagat Mithya. When Mithya is Brahmam, isn't it? A Brahmam comes. You know the word Brahmam inside us, right? You may ask this question, is it an organized Brahmam? Or is it not the whole thing is faulty? No. What he's saying is that even though it is a Brahmam, if it is in its organized way that Brahmam is happening, you can't say it is not a Brahman. Even it is an organized thing. Everything is organized. Everything is happening here with a reason. And there is cause behind it. Karyam karanam, on that basis, right? There is a cause behind everything. But still it can be a Brahman. It can be a Brahman. See, what is a symptom of a Brahman? You have to understand the word Brahman also. Because if these symptoms are there, it is Brahman. Why? When we say it is Brahman, what does that Brahman mean? Brahman means something has got a identity, right? But I am seeing that thing in a different way. It is not the identity what I am experiencing within me about that object in a different way is called Brahman. You see that? I'll tell you what. We say that anything in this creation, we feel real. Why? Because Krishna is present in that. Instead of seeing Krishna in an object, I am seeing the name and form of a person and seeing that that's him, that's Brahman. Do you get the point? See, this word Brahman is a very complex word it is. Shastram says Brahman. In English you call it as illusion, I think. Illusion doesn't carry the same meaning because Brahman is coming from a different angle altogether. When you say illusion, it is based on mundane concept, it is, this illusion. Oh, you are an illusion. You are thinking something in your mind. That's why we say illusion, isn't it? In your mind you thought something different, you say you are an illusion. You are an illusion about something, you say. Something happened and you say to him, that person said something and you say, oh no, you are an illusion. Or we say about somebody, oh, he will do this thing for me or he will do that thing for me. And you said this to somebody and he says to you, well, you are an illusion that he is going to do this for you. You are an illusion, he says. What does that? That's not the same here. What Shastram is saying here is, you are seeing so many things here and you are perceiving that as the name and form, a person or a name and form as real. And you are dealing with him all the time or her in that way. Shastram is saying, you are in Brahman. Why? Because you don't know that person is not that name and form. Not that name and form. So, thing which is not real, and if you know in a different anything in a different way, that is called Brahman. That is called Brahman. Whereas, if you have understood it in an organized way, what does that mean? Through Shastram, right? Then that Brahman won't be there in that way. For example, there are examples in the Shastram for all these things, right? So it says that Jabakusumam. Jabakusumam means that flower in the Jabakusuma Sankasham Kashyavayam Mahadidim. There is prayers to Sri Parvati on that. Raktaspadiyam, reddish color. So, Spadiyam. Spadiyam means this, what is called the, glass, which is, you got the glass bottles? What do they call it? Spadiyam they call it. This Shivalingam also is there in Spadiyam. Crystal glass, yeah, that's right. Crystal glass, right? So, everyone you come and see, look at this crystal glass, right? Sometimes you get a reddish color of that. Crystal glass, reddish color, right? And it is Spadiyam, crystal glass, but it is reddish in color. You get the reddish color from that, right? Can you say that it is not Brahman? No, because crystal glass normally it is white, right? But you appears to you it is reddish in color. Sometimes glasses like that, isn't it? So if you are seeing it like that, can you say it's not Brahman? Right? No, because it is in an organized way that reddish color has come to that, right? So any Brahman, if it is based in an organized way, that in that Brahman also will be organized. The Brahman will also be organized, right? And any Brahman is experienced by everyone in the same way, that Brahman will be in a different way than other things. For example, right, these are complex Vedantam they're talking about here, that any individual experience of Brahman is there, that is due to my individual avidya. You know avidya. Avidya means ignorance, isn't it? Avidya means ignorance, right? This ignorance is there in all of us. Yeah? But ignorance in me is different than the ignorance in you or ignorance in you. They analyze ignorance like this. We are all ignorant different ways. Yeah? For example, you may have some good realization about spiritual life in your life. I may not have that. So, from that aspect, I am more ignorant and you are more knowledgeable on that. You have more realization on that. So, in this way, avidya, in all of us, avidya is not the same. Avidya is different in all of us. Different ways avidya works, right? In the same way, I may know about crystal glass as white, always. And if there is some reddish color comes to it, I think there is something reason behind it, and I can analyze it and find out why it is so. But you may not have that realization, and you are surprised by thinking that there is no reason crystal glass could be reddish. What's wrong with that? You may think in a different way. See, it's so difficult sometimes to analyze the mind. Just like, I am dreaming something based on my avidya. You are dreaming something based on your avidya inside, right? Therefore, my experience in dream is not the same as your experience in the dream. Isn't it? Do you understand? You see, it's avidya that is coming out in the dream. Avidya inside is taking form in the dream, right? So, in this way, there are so many different Brahmam in us. And dream state is a Brahmam for all of us. I think, why I am dreaming like this and you are dreaming in a different way? I am having a good dream, you are having a bad dream. Or you have a good dream, I have a bad dream. Why? And I can't explain it. You can't explain yourself why it is happening, right? In this way, Brahmam is there, and I get Brahmam in my dream, and you get Brahmam in your dream also, right? So therefore, it is difficult to say that there is no Brahmam. So, but therefore, what it's saying is, even though this world you accept it as a Brahmam, you cannot say that Brahmam is not organized. There is an organized reason behind it. You see, at the moment, I am dreaming, right? I get some dreams, and I am saying there is no connection with anything. I am saying that my dream has nothing to do with anything. It just happened like that. It's not organized, it's just a Brahmam, I think. Shastram says, no, it's not a Brahmam. Shastram is saying, you have done something in previous lifetimes, which is lying inside you in some vasanas inside. When it got the right opportunity, Antaryami inside decided to throw it out from inside. And all that is unknown to me. So my statement that it is a Brahmam is false. Isn't it? Isn't it? You see how these words have to be thought through a lot to understand it properly. Just quoting one Upanishad words is not good enough. When you go into it, you start seeing this Upanishad's mantram, how deep they are, that they think that everything has got a reason behind it, without which cannot happen. Without which it cannot happen. Why the planets are placed in different positions? Because scientists lack this subtlety, what the rishis have got. Rishis are coming from an angle about this creation. They are saying to us, this whole creation has a reason behind it. It's not that whimsically it's coming from Mahavishnu's body. And they are giving to us a knowledge which is completely based on reasoning, for which science has no answer about it. So, whatever they are concerned, Shastram is concerned, everything what's happening in the vacant state, what's happening in the dream state, what happening in the deep sleep is all happening in an organized way. So therefore, even though I am feeling the Brahmam about it, illusion about it, it is not the reality. That's the first thing, right? Up to a certain extent, there is an organization, right? So whichever way other philosophers talk about it, Dvaitis also talk about that there is a system. Advaitis also says the same thing, that there is a system, right? And if there is a system existing in all these things, there must be a power which has created the system. It didn't happen by accident. This is all acceptable in Dvaitam, Advaitam, both. Prabhupada had a god-brother. He is no more now. Sridhar Maharaj, right? Very well known, Prabhupada used to go consult him because everybody accepted him as an authority on the Shastram, Siddhantam, everything, right? So, Sridhar Maharaj said once that somebody asked this question about this Vedanta philosophy, right? They asked him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is Ajindya Bheda Bhedam, isn't it? Ajindya Bheda Bheda Tattvam. Similarly, there is Advaitam, Dvaitam, Vishishta Dvaitam, Kevala Dvaitam, Shuddha Dvaitam, all other things as well. So, they wanted to understand from him, why is Ajindya Bheda Bhedam different from others and why is the only truth? How he answered was beautiful. He said to them, I don't think you have understood anything, he said. Because what he was saying to them was that these tattvam, Advaitam, Dvaitam, Vishishta Dvaitam, Kevala Dvaitam, no. Originally there was only the three, and they are the three still taken seriously. For example, Ajindya Bheda Bhedam. What Ajindya Bheda Bhedam is? Ajindya Bheda Bhedam, what he has done, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has propagated is, he took two things from Vishishta Dvaitam, two from Dvaitam, and two from Nimbarka Acharya's philosophy, Shuddha Dvaitam or something, and then he added on to it something, and that is what is called Ajindya Bheda Bhedam. It's not pure on its own. It has borrowed some things from Ramanuja's Vishishta Dvaitam. It's borrowed something from Madhvacharya's Dvaitam. It's borrowed something from Nimbarkacharya's Kevala Dvaitam. And then Mahaprabhu added something to it, and he said it is simultaneously one and different and inconceivable. This is what Ajindya Bheda Bhedam means, isn't it? Ajindya means inconceivable. Ajindya Bheda Bhedam, inconceivable, simultaneously one and different. So this was created from all the other philosophies together, brought together, right? So originality is only in the Advaitam, Vishishta Advaitam and Dvaitam. Those three, originality. Then he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took two from Ramanuja's Vishishta Advaitam, two from Madhvacharya's Advaitam, two from Nimbarka's Advaitam, and two he has added on like that. Didn't take from Advaitam anything. Because this reason that Vaishnavam, Bhakti and all was a separate phenomenon. But then he said, don't say that Advaitam is nothing to do with us. He said, we are all in the one family because our mother is one, Veda. That's what he said. Vedam is our mother, we are all the children, including Advaitam, he said, is the children of that Vedam. Mother is Vedam. We are children. We may fight each other, but originally our mother is Vedam, including Advaitam. You know what else he said? He said, it's just like this, he said. Pandavas and the Kauravas, right? Pandavas were always fighting with Kauravas. But if an outsider enemy comes, we will join the Kauravas because they are our family members, he said. In the same way. They are our family members. And therefore, if an outside enemy comes, we will support Duryodhan and we'll give all the help to him, whatever we can, to fight against an outside enemy. Because for us, he is an outsider. For us, a Kaurava is our closer. In the same way, we will fight with Advaitam and all that. But if outside enemy comes, for us, Advaitam is ours, he said. We will support Advaitam because Advaitam is coming from the same mother. So this is how Sridhara Swami, Sridhara Maharaj, Prabhupada's God brother, made. I think our devotees get this difficulty. They are finding it, because sometimes we get into this mode, isn't it, to establish that we are the only right ones. Others, you didn't get it, we got it. So that kind of thinking comes. He was trying to make them understand, change your way of thinking, that you cannot go on thinking that we had to wait only 500 years ago we got the truth. Before that nobody knew what was happening here. That's not how it is. What he's saying is this, that Vedam give you a lot of leverage is there in the Vedam. This is the beauty of the Vedam. Lot of leverage there. That means depending on your mindset, your way of thoughts or your nature and what you have done in your previous life, all this has an influence on your current way of thinking. And you can't deny that. That is why we are all different each other. isn't it? We are all not thinking identical. Even a small thing, if I say something, few people will understand in few different ways. This is the beauty, and Vedam recognizes this. So therefore in Vedam, we have different traditions and different ways different people have presented, and at different stages in life, you will be attracted based on your previous vasanas and previous life thinking. Yeah. So we will stop it today. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.